It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The president-elect promised to pressure American companies that tried to ship American jobs overseas, and he's delivered on that promise in Indiana. A political victory for him and a personal relief for carrier employees that were about to be out of work.
I would like to tell him thank you for going out of your way and taking your holiday away from your family and working on the carrier and employees deal and sticking to your word.
Carrier's parent company does 10% of its business with the federal government and now gets to maintain a good relationship with the next administration, keeping 1,000 jobs that were Mexico-bound in Indiana in exchange for tax breaks, according to a report in the Wall Street Journal.
Exactly what he said was going to happen is happening. He said he was going to fight to keep those jobs here. He picked up the phone. They worked a deal. They got it done.
All right, that's just the first part of Peter Ducey's report last night on Special Report. If I sound a little strange, it's because we're having some technical problems this morning, but we're working on them. There are so many things to report about what's happening on Trump's team in terms of finances. In fact, he's appointed some very competent people. I can't speak with expertise about them, just know a few things about what I've read. Wilbur Ross is one of them, and he's known as sort of a fixer. So they're planning to cut taxes for the middle class. They're going to revamp the tax code. And so am I back on, you guys? No. All right. They're going to revamp the tax code. He's also hiring Todd Ricketts, who's the co-owner of the Chicago Cubs, as Deputy Commerce Secretary. It's really an amazing thing. And I think people are energized because certainly we know that jobs and the economy have just been such a serious problem. So it looks like an all-holes-barred attack to try to rebuild the economy. Whether, you know, the Trump team can do this, you know, who knows? It remains to be seen. But he's hiring certainly some men who are intent upon doing that. And so we'll just have to see how this ends up. We're going to skip ahead because yesterday, Border Patrol Chief Mark Morgan testified before the Senate Homeland Security Committee. The whole issue of immigration is, of course, another one with Jeff Sessions, the pending nominee as Attorney General. And we all know how Senator Sessions feels about illegal immigration, and so the ground is shifting. So yesterday, before Congress, Mark Morgan, again, Border Patrol Chief, said this. Let's listen.
Good morning, Chairman Johnson, Ranking Member Carper, and distinguished members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to allow us to talk today about the United States Border Patrol. During my first 4 months of chief, I've had the privilege to travel to 11 sectors to meet with thousands of United States Border Patrol agents, staff, and leadership from the northern, southern, and coastal borders, as well as the United States Border Patrol Academy, headquarters here in D.C., the K-9 training facility, and our Special Operations Group in El Paso. In all these interactions across the country, one thing was consistent and abundantly clear. The men and women of the United States Border Patrol have one of the toughest jobs in federal law enforcement. They are the most assaulted federal law enforcement in the United States. More than 7,400 Border Patrol agents have been assaulted since 2006. That rose in FY16 by 20%, and year-to-date, we're seeing an increase of assaults of 200% from the previous year to date. It's a dangerous job, and since my short time here, two Border Patrol agents have already been killed in the line of duty, Agent Manny Alvarez and David Gomez. They are faced with unforgiving terrain and weather, limited resources, long hours, adverse conditions, and they're often called upon to go above and beyond what they've been trained to do. They are tenacious in the pursuit of getting better. They're innovative, and they have a can-do attitude. They're dedicated to the mission, this country, themselves, and doing something greater than themselves. I'm honored to be serving with them. These are my first and most important observations of my first 4 months here.
Well, that's Border Patrol Chief Mark Morgan yesterday testifying before the Senate Homeland Security Committee. And, wow, you know, I was just reading in the Free Beacon. This is really amazing. And this is also from Mark Morgan. It's more of his testimony that you didn't hear in that clip. He said that border agents have expressed shock at the menial tasks they've been required to perform following a massive flow of illegal immigrant children across the U.S. southern border. So he says the force is being strained. He said during one recent trip to a Border Patrol outpost, the supervisor in charge said, "Chief, we're going to do whatever this country asks us to do, but I never thought in my 20 years that I would be as part of procurement ordering baby powder and baby wipes. I just got from one sector," Morgan continued, "where agents, one of their jobs during the day is to actually make sure the food, the burritos we're providing are being warmed properly. Warmed properly. It takes a tremendous amount of resources to do this. And the number of unaccompanied children and families traveling from Central America to the U.S. has increased significantly during the past few years and certainly in the last few weeks." And then part of his testimony, he said basically 100% of those family units and unaccompanied children are released into the U.S. And he said that the resources of the Border Patrol are now being dedicated to being professional child care providers at this point. And then also, we're returning less than 4%. So it isn't the reality that if you come as an unaccompanied child from Central America and you get into this country, by the way, it's easy to get here, you just walk across the bridge, you turn yourself in, you're apprehended and processed and dispersed. And it goes on and on. They have access to social media, they tell their families back in Central America, and then more people come. So you can see why we need help, and that makes it even more interesting to me that Mike McCall has been talked about as a Homeland Security Director. I want you to hear what he said with Brett Baer yesterday in exchange. This is Cut 7.
I want to turn and ask you about your meeting with the President-elect. You're said to be considered for Homeland Security Secretary, a job I assume you want. How did that meeting go, by your thoughts?
I thought it went very well. We had a very productive and substantive conversation on his priorities, many of them related to Homeland Security. We talked about this case specific, the Ohio State case, and we talked about, in terms of immigration, how can we ramp up the vetting procedures overseas so we don't have this happened in the United States, and we don't have the Orlandos and the New York Rouhani bombing and the San Bernardino cases.
Today in the Washington Times, the president of the Americans for Legal Immigration, PAC, wrote, "We certainly hope that Donald Trump would not reward a deceptive pro-amnesty lawmaker like Michael McCall with a cabinet position. That would be very disappointing to all of us that believed his campaign promises to secure our borders and deport millions of illegal immigrants under current U.S. law." Your response to that?
Unfortunately, when you have people jockeying for a position, they will go to the press and say negative and false things. This is absolutely false. I've never supported that idea. In fact, I've been consistently the biggest advocate on the Hill to secure the border. And I talked to Mr. Trump about how we can secure the border once and for all and building the wall. Countless times I've stood up to defend the United States against terror coming in and terrorist pathways. So I find it incredulous, inflammatory, and quite frankly, it's slanderous.
Well, it might be slanderous, but it might also be true. Mike McCall's not telling the truth about that, and I thought it was really interesting that Brett Baer should challenge him. I'm sure he didn't see that question coming. I don't know what it is with Mike McCall. It's like, well, I guess I do. I mean, we have seen repeatedly, we certainly see the left did this all the time, but we are seeing it become the norm for Republican leaders to speak out of both sides of their mouth. So Brett caught him up, asked him directly. He did the same thing with Paul Ryan a couple of weeks ago when he asked him directly, you seem to be, these are my words, singing a different tune on immigration. Oh, no. Donald Trump and I, have similar views on immigration. Are you kidding? Paul Ryan is open borders. Mike McCall has cooperated with him fully. And so this will be interesting. I tell you, I will be really, really surprised if Mike McCall is selected as Homeland Security Secretary. I really don't think that's going to happen. But then, I could be wrong. And then I want to also add, as we go out on the break here, that John Bolton is still very much in the running for Secretary of State. His name has not been mentioned in the headlines, but he's been working behind the scenes. I think he's going in to talk to Donald Trump today, where Rudy Giuliani's been and Mitt Romney have been sort of doing a public relations campaign to get chosen. John Bolton's been working behind the scenes. So, you know, don't be surprised if he's not announced as the Secretary of State, and that would be a good thing. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Here's Steve Russo with Real Answers.
Psychology Today magazine ran an article about a man who dedicated 3 hours a day for 10 years to complaining. Each day he'd call, write, or talk to someone about what he thought was wrong with the world. The article concluded that the only result of this exercise was that it made him incredibly miserable. Complaining is a habit that is highly contagious anywhere people are together, like work, school, or even at home. When you are surrounded by complainers, it's easy to become one yourself. If you find yourself exhausted every night, maybe you've been whining too much all day. Why not consider curbing your complaints and follow God's advice in Philippians 2. In everything you do, stay away from complaining and arguing so that no one can speak a word of blame against you. Let your life be characterized by gratitude and encouragement. You'll be glad you did.
To learn more about Real Answers, check out Steve's website, www.realanswers.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. One of my guilty pleasures is watching Fixer Upper on HGTV. Chip and Joanna Gaines not only made Waco, Texas a tourist destination, but they also taught us how to use shiplap. You're going to have to Google that. I also appreciate that Chip and Joanna are Christians. You can see how their faith flavors their television show, but not everybody appreciates their Christian beliefs. And now the militant LGBT crowd is on the warpath, claiming Chip and Joanna attend a church opposed to same-sex marriage. It's true they do attend Antioch Community Church, a non-denominational congregation, and they believe that marriage is between one man and one woman. Does that mean HGTV should cancel Fixer Upper? Reporters are demanding answers from HGTV and the Gaines family. It's nothing more than a modern-day witch hunt. Chip and Joanna Gaines are good people, and where they worship is their business, not yours. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Oh, I had House Speaker Paul Ryan in that very chair a few weeks ago asking him about immigration. He did sound a little bit different, obviously, than Donald Trump on the trail. Do you think that there will be synergy in how to deal with immigration with the House and Senate Republicans and the Trump administration?
I think there's going to be great synergy. And the meeting I had with the president-elect was very positive in terms of advancing his agenda. I think what we're going to be looking at is how do we build the wall, secure the border? How do we deport criminal aliens out of the United States? How do we close off terror pathways in the United States to stop like the Ohio State terrorists from coming in? How do we stop the Rouhani's in New York from the bombing plots? How do we ramp up vetting in overseas countries? Rudy Giuliani and I and Judge Mukasey, the World Trade Center federal judge and attorney general of the United States, and I worked together on a memo that we provided to the president-elect 6 months ago talking about how we can ramp up this vetting process overseas in terror hotspots to keep bad guys and terrorists from coming into the United States.
That was Mike McCall on a special report last night. Sandy Rios with you. I'm doing a bait and switch on my guests, but I'm not really. We're not going to spend the whole time talking about this, but Daniel Horowitz of Conservative Review, I think you might have a few thoughts about Mike McCall claiming that accusations that he is pro-amnesty are absolute lies. Just a word about that before we move to our topic.
You know, Sandy, it's like the fox guarding the hen house here. It's so funny, all the people that we begged and begged when we actually needed them to help us during the Gang of Eight fight, they were nowhere to be seen, and they were working with the other side. You know, all of a sudden they're big hawks now because he wants to be selected as DHS secretary. The reality is, if Trump really wants to drain the swamp, this is the worst pick. This is a man that wrote a letter to CARE on a note card saying, indicating that they were moderate and part of the solution. This man does not get the problem with the Muslim Brotherhood. He has just been the embodiment of what's wrong with Republicans, so this is a very bad choice.
Yes, and it was amazing. Brett kind of caught him off guard last night and said that anti-amnesty groups were saying that he was pro-amnesty. And boy, that was a hot button, and he wasn't happy about that. But I'm with you, Daniel. I just hope and pray he's not the nominee. All right, let's move to our issue here, because there was a lame duck session, and it's hardly being discussed because, you know, there's so many things going on, as usual, that some of the important things are being lost. I want to talk to you first about the National Defense Authorization Act, which is scheduled to be voted on in the House tomorrow. And part of the concern here, Daniel, is this, they have stripped out what's called the Russell Amendment, which would protect religious organizations from being required by President Obama's executive order to hire people who do not adhere to their religious or moral tenets. That's the issue, and it looks like the House is going to pass this bill without that protection for any kind of religious groups. What is the status with that, and what's going on with that?
Sure. I mean, just to clarify, this is something that would apply to every department and agency where you have federal government contractors and private organizations. So in the case of the defense bill, you certainly have the most private contractors that come in out of defense. They build different hardware, different things. So anyone at that company, they have to adhere to Obama's transgender policy. And, this was probably the only, I don't even want to call it social conservative because I just hate using that term with regards to transgenderism. I don't think you even need to be one to see the problems with it. But, you know, that was the one victory we got this past conference, Congress, where you had Steve Russell from Oklahoma, got that amendment in, several appropriation bills. One of them was a defense bill. And then, it was taken out in the Senate-House conference that they're now going back to the House. Now, the important thing is the House is voting on it today, and a conference report, meaning something that passed both houses, they went to conference, now they're sending it back to pass the same version, send it to the president, is unamendable, right? So you can't, it's not like you could go slip that in. It's an all-or-nothing proposition. So you're basically telling people, hey, do you not want to authorize all the defense programs? You got to vote for it. And the reality is this is not something that needs to be voted on now. There is no reason this should be done in a lame duck session. Wait until you have a Republican president who could sign good legislation. They should do this in February.
All right, so Daniel, you're saying that the entire bill, the National Defense Authorization Act, could be voted on after Trump is actually president. It could be delayed?
No, absolutely. To be clear, there's something called an authorization bill and an appropriation bill. The appropriation bill is what actually gives the money. You know, you need the money to operate, otherwise you have a so-called shutdown, so to speak. That needed to be done October 1st. That was done already. They have the money. Authorization is when you kind of authorize the policies behind it, but it doesn't have to to be done. It's going to operate anyway, and we're already several months into the fiscal year, and they haven't passed it. They're running late anyway. Why do it in the lame duck? Wait until next year, and you can get
a better
deal.
So why are they doing this?
So this is the problem with a lot of things they're doing now. You know, they always tell us, look, come on, Daniel, what do you want us to do? We don't have the presidency. We don't have enough power. What do you want us to do? This is where the rubber meets the road and demonstrates that these guys don't share our values. It's not just a lack of means. It's a lack of will. Because if you really wanted to do the right thing and you just lack the power, wait until next year. Why are they passing so many big bills in the lame duck session that they don't need to be passing now? They should just pass a simple budget extension to April and get out of town.
Yeah, so why are they? I just don't understand. And, of course, this is not the only thing that they're passing. You just wrote an article on this big health care expense. What's that all about?
Every Republican who runs for office will yap and yap about the $20 trillion debt. But not only don't Republicans do anything, lift a finger to reduce the debt, cut spending, cut even the baseline of spending, every week they seem to pass new bills that add spending, a billion here, a billion there. They passed this $6.3 billion health care spending bill that's 1,000 pages long. It authorizes or appropriates money for three of Obama's cures programs, cure cancer. And this sounds great, and it's great to demagogue and say, oh, you know, if you oppose it, people are going to get cancer. But the National Institutes of Health already has $30 billion. We spend $1 trillion at a federal level for HHS and the health care program. Throwing money at the problem doesn't solve it, because otherwise, why don't you just double it, triple it? I mean, if that leads to cures. But it's not just that. They suck in mental health stuff. They suck in changes to foster care. This was a lobbyist Christmas tree omnibus bill that was introduced Monday. They voted for it yesterday. There is no way any member was able to dissect even 10% of this complex bill. Over 400 pharmaceutical companies, 1,400 lobbyists were involved. It was the most lobbied bill of the entire session, yet it was shoved down in 2 days in the lame duck. It just makes no sense.
And we have to hasten to add that the Republicans are in charge. This is a Republican House and Senate. This is not, they don't have to do this. And so this is their version of big spending. And the other thing, too, Daniel, is they're making these big boasts and headlines about how they're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. They hope to do it within the first 100 days. So everything's going to shift on health care. So this really is a pointless exercise and just a pouring out of money to their friends. Is that an exaggeration?
No, that's exactly the point. And again, here's the frustration with these 1,000-page bills. There were a couple of moderate FDA reforms, expediting approval, because that's a big part of the problem, driving up the cost of health care itself, the FDA regulations that need to be reformed. But, we know that they're going to pass, or hopefully going to pass, a conservative health care bill next year. Wait for that. Don't shove it into this $6 billion spending bill where you force members into an all-or-nothing proposition. This is what they do to them. And, by the way, this entire lame duck was set on the wrong tone. They came back the first day or second day where they just held leadership elections before anyone could run on a certain platform, say what they want to do next Congress. Also, the freshman members who didn't even know where the bathrooms were came up because they're a part of this, because this is leadership for next Congress. They don't even know what these positions are. Throw them into conference. Here are the positions. And what happened? Every single current leader was reelected. So it's same old, same old.
Yeah, the very, very, very disappointing. No question about it. I want to come back to the Russell Amendment in just a second. But before we do that, Daniel, this continuing resolution, I heard a discussion yesterday projecting that perhaps they will fund the government through next May. I know there had been some talk about doing it through February so that Donald Trump would have a fresh start. What are your thoughts about what they're going to do with that?
So obviously, in this case, we've always opposed these big, these spending bills that didn't prioritize conservative priorities. Now, if help is going to be on the way, hopefully within a few months, you figure, just pass it, get out of town. But, you don't want to wait too long. You want to be able to force some changes as early as possible. Now, you do have a busy Senate schedule with all the cabinet confirmation hearings and votes. So, you know, you got to give them at least a month or two. But when they start talking about May or June, I mean, that's pretty late. I think it should be more like March, and that way you could already start forcing some changes and conditioning funding and getting some religious liberty amendments in there. Donald Trump won 82% of white evangelical Christians, a record number. He's very into quid pro quo, so hopefully he'll pay up to social conservatives and remember who brought him to the ball.
Well, so meanwhile, though, the Congress is tone deaf. And I want to go back to this National Defense Authorization Act, because actually, let me say to people listening, I'm going to ask you to call your congressman. I just think this is disgraceful. I really do. That given the election, the way it came down, that they should ignore something so simple. It doesn't even involve, you know, it's not even, we're not talking a ton of money or a ton of contractors, but people who have religious organizations, whether it's Catholic Charities or whether it's, I don't know who, has government contracts, but I know that there are lots of them, some colleges and universities maybe. Because of an executive order that the president signed, they are forced to accept transgender, LGBT, whatever else. They are not allowed any kind of conscience clause at all, which has been in place for more than a decade. And the House is just rolling over and allowing this to happen. Is there anything more to say about that, Daniel, and what the most effective way to respond to this is?
So the hope is that this becomes moot next year, that, you know, garbage in, garbage out, whatever Obama did through executive order, you could take away, although we do have to make sure that it's on the table. So it's not like much is going to change, and that's the point. So then why pass this? Why give them this victory? The sexual identity lobby was working very hard over the election break, you know, when Congress was out, to make sure that the NDAA conference wouldn't have this provision. Why give them that victory? Don't pass it. That's what people need to remember. The appropriation is already there. This is more of a formality that they always pass this, but nothing's going to change. It's all more administratively. And that's something that people need to be aware of. You look at the Pentagon, you think it's more defense and foreign policy, and that's very important. But the reality is Obama has turned our military into a petri dish for social experimentation. I mean, just the women in combat stuff and the homosexual agenda, anti-Christian fervor in the military now with going after chaplains who express their views. So, I mean, this is something we have to make sure whoever he appoints as the Secretary of Defense gets on the right side of. I mean, this is not just defense. Social conservatives have a lot at stake in the Pentagon.
No question about it, Daniel. In fact, the American Family Association was singled out because so many troops listen to this show, for one thing, listen to AFR, and they would give money, and they also would talk about it, and they were starting to single them out and punish them in the military for supporting the American Family Association, because we are allegedly a hate group, according to the SPLC. So many things have to be changed, but this is not a good beginning. Now, they would argue, I think, back that the president has said he will threaten this bill if it has this provision in it, giving religious protections or conscience protections. How would you respond to that?
That's exactly the point. That's the point with this. That's the point with this Cures Act, a lot of other bad stuff they're passing. Get out of town. Wait a few months. There's no need for this. If they are telling you we need this, they are absolutely wrong. Do you know how many, Sandy, do you know how many domestic programs, have been on autopilot and have not been authorized for 5, 10, 20 years, but they appropriate the funds anyway? Again, all things equal, you want an authorization bill, but they're late. They're a couple months into the fiscal year anyway. Wait another 2 months.
Oh, Daniel, I know that you certainly were not a Trump supporter at all. You've been pretty cynical, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean properly cynical about the change of power and what it might mean. But in regard to the House and Senate, do you see any, because you know it so well, you know the process so well, do you think that these guys, meaning McConnell and Ryan and others of the leadership, are going to actually move to the right and adopt some of Donald Trump's better policy, better from our perspective, in terms of immigration and other things? Do you think that they'll move to the right and actually do something?
You know, I'm not so surprised, but I'm a little surprised that absolutely not. This is what I've been chronicling at Conservative Review. Post the election, I thought there would be some sort of inspiration where everyone thought he would lose, and then he won, and just how widespread it was. He won 85% of the counties, despite, you know, a lot of his flaws, and despite being outspent and everything. they would look at this groundswell from the public and say, wow, they really do want change. No, it is literally business as usual with these guys. We have the most liberal Senate ever. All the committee chairmen, Lamar Alexander, will be in charge of education and health care, Orrin Hatch, taxes, whatever important issue. I mean, Bob Corker is still in charge of foreign policy. It is, there is nothing. This is all going to come down to the Trump administration. They have got to show the leadership. I think if they fulfill their promises, they could force the congressional leadership to go along with them. But if there is not enough positive energy from them, it sure as heck is not going to come from the congressional
leader. Well, we're all watching. We're watching with the nominations. We're going to be, and there'll be pressure on Congress to cooperate with President-elect Trump, you know, as long as he stays the course. A lot of things to watch, but I am encouraged, at least to some extent. Daniel Horowitz, Conservative Review was one of the best. ConservativeReview.com. Daniel's article on what's happening in the lame duck we'll put on our Facebook page so that you can share it. Daniel, thank you for joining me this morning.
Take care. God bless.
Bye.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. Healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. Healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
One of the leading indicators of a community in crisis is the breakup of the family. I think it's a very clear illustration of what our culture demands right now, and that is the leadership of the church rolling up its sleeves, getting into our communities.
Hear the latest from Washington from a Christian, conservative worldview. Washington Watch Weekly with Tony Perkins, Saturdays at 6 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, American Family Radio. Todd Starnes here. And you know, there's no place like the Mid-South when it comes to Christmas. That's why I'm filming my big Fox Christmas show at Bellevue Baptist Church in Memphis, a two-hour extravaganza featuring Grammy winner Jason Crabb and worship artist Meredith Andrews and my Uncle Don from Arkansas. December 6th, doors open at 6:30. Admission is free. Folks, it's going to be a great night of family fun as we celebrate the reason for the season. For more information, visit ToddStarnes.com.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, Barack Obama's Secretary of Homeland Security delivered what should be the kiss of death to the ambitions of a prospective successor, Representative Michael McCaul. Jay Johnson is, after all, the poster child of official willful blindness towards Islamic supremacism. The Trump administration must not perpetuate such malfeasance. Secretary Johnson thinks so highly of the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee because McCaul has repeatedly supported Team Obama's Islamist-dictated and enabling countering violent extremism program. The congressman even inscribed a photograph he took with leaders of the Council on American Islamic Relations, extolling them as, quote, moderate Muslims, unquote, and, quote, our secret weapon, unquote. In fact, CARE is Hamas. Candidate Donald Trump promised to counter the anti-constitutional Sharia ideology aggressively promoted by Muslim Brotherhood fronts like CARE that will require like-minded subordinates, not those willfully blind like Jay Johnson and Michael McCall. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios just back with you. We were speaking with Daniel just a few minutes ago about how the American military has become the object of experimentation, much to their detriment. Many of you serve. You listen to me every day, and you know better than I do the dangers that your lives have been placed in, your family members. I know that many families who have, you know, generations of families serving are for the first time encouraging some of their boys and girls not to sign up because they're concerned. Let me give you an example of something before I introduce our next guest. This is from an article that she just wrote, and I have in my hand a picture of this Staff Sergeant Matthew Sitton. And this is a letter. First of all, let's see. In August of 2010, he and another soldier stepped on an IED in a minefield in Afghanistan, and they were both killed. Now, that's important because not long before that, he wrote a letter to his congressman, and this is what he said. Hello, my name is Sergeant Matthew Sitton. I am in the 82nd Airborne Division stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I'm currently deployed with the 4th Brigade Combat Team in support of Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. I'm writing you because I'm concerned for the safety of my soldiers. This is the third combat tour to Afghanistan, so I have seen the transition in rules of engagement and overall tactics over the past 6 years. I'm only writing this email because I feel myself and my soldiers are being put in unnecessary positions where harm and danger are imminent. I know the threat of casualties in war and am totally on board with sacrifice for my country. But what I don't agree with is the chain of command making us walk through, or lack of a better term, basically a minefield on a daily basis. I am in a platoon of 25 soldiers. We are operating at a tempo that is set for a full 35 to 40-man infantry platoon. We've been mandated to patrol twice daily for 2 to 4 hours each patrol, on top of guarding our FOB and conducting routine maintenance of our equipment. There is no end state or purpose for the patrols given to us from our higher chain of command, only that we will be out for a certain time standard. I'm all for getting on the ground and fighting for my country when I know there is a desired end state and we have clear guidance of what needs to be done. But when we are told basically to just walk around for a certain amount of time, and it's not sitting well with me. As a brigade, we are averaging a minimum, an amputee a day from our soldiers because we are walking around aimlessly through grape rows and compounds that are littered with explosives. Here is an example of how bad things have gotten. Our small FOB was flooded accidentally by a local early one morning a few days ago. He was watering his fields and the dam he had broke, and water came flooding into our living area. Since our FOB does not have any portable bathrooms, we had to dig a hole in the ground where soldiers could use the bathroom. That also got flooded and contaminated all the water that later soaked every soldier and his gear. Instead of returning to base and cleaning up, our chain of command was so set on us meeting the brigade commander's 2 patrols a day guidance that they made us move outside the flooded FOB and conduct our patrols soaked in urine. This is just part of this letter from Sergeant Matthew Sitton. And it was, and again, let me repeat, that he and another soldier then were consequently killed while stepping on an EID in one of these walkabouts in August of 2012. Well, my guest is Diana West. Diana is an award-winning author. She's written, let me just mention at least two of the books that she's written, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character, and also The Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization. She's written this article because David Petraeus is being considered for Secretary of State, and General David Petraeus was very much responsible for this whole strategy that caused this officer and his men to be, well, this enlisted man and his office and his men to be walking around aimlessly and being damaged permanently by these IEDs, and in some cases, certainly in the sergeant's case, killed. Diana, thanks for joining me. Sorry for the long introduction.
Oh, yes, it's wonderful to be with you, Sandy. This is such an important part of our history
that has really been lost to us because our media never reported on it in any kind of comprehensive way. And I would just add that it's not just David Petraeus. The other general officer that is really credited with this counterinsurgency strategy is also General James Mattis, who is also being considered for very high position in the new Trump administration. They are two progenitors of this coin strategy.
Diana, you have to explain, because I didn't. Why in the world were they having these men walk around so twice a day on patrols? What's the thinking behind that?
Well, the thinking behind this is the basis of counterinsurgency doctrine, which is known for short as COIN, C-O-I-N, COIN. And the basis of COIN is this idea that American military might should be used to persuade, to win the hearts and minds of the Islamic communities in these lands in which we were fighting. In other words, that there was something that we could have our men do, a way they could act, a way they could perform, that would somehow bridge the chasm between essentially infidel armies, you know, mainly Christian armies, and these Islamic people living in these Islamic countries, Iraq and Afghanistan, where we were fighting. That, in other words, this was not a matter of military strength to execute a strategy to win territory. This was about getting into the minds of the people who lived in these countries. And it was an absolutely criminal, bankrupt policy because it did not ever take into account the laws of Islam, the culture of Islam, the history of Islam, that would make such an endeavor impossible. And rather than retool and rethink these things, the effect of it was essentially to put the American military under Islamic law. And what I mean by that is it was a way of ordering American military to observe the laws of Islam while in the Islamic world in order to curry favor, in order to essentially cozy up to the locals as proto-Muslims. I'm not kidding. This was specifically in directives, for example, about how to handle the Quran, wearing gloves, treated as a piece of art, in ways to, in other words, patrol without wearing ballistic goggles so as not to threaten people. The idea of not giving offense, and this, again, we're talking about military forces, this essentially stripped our men of their protection, literally, as we see with men who are not allowed to wear body armor so as not to offend locals. I mean, this is a true story. I have another column about this that was discovered at an inquest of a British soldier, that the soldiers were prevented from wearing body armor, prevented from opening fire on Taliban fighters so as not to disturb locals who might be asleep. I mean, this was essentially orders to walk on eggs around the Islamic populations, and then meanwhile, a big part of it was literally to walk the roads, and indeed the grapes or the grape fields and other towns that were mined with IEDs, getting back to the tragic story of Staff Sergeant Sitton, and that was in 2012. They were ordered to do this to show good faith, to show what great people we were, to make people like us. And this carried out to every aspect of the military strategy. And in a sense, when you get down to this level, you are essentially prostrating yourself before local customs and laws, and it doesn't work.
Diana,
it doesn't work. It just leaves men exposed. And when we look at the horrific number of amputations and deaths caused by IEDs, well, these go right back to General Petraeus's directive to walk the roads, to take off their glasses. This was something General Mattis also ordered men in Iraq, take off your glasses, don't look threatening. Well, a Marine mom wrote to me all these years telling me when they order the men to take off their ballistic glasses and a bomb explodes, well, the shards from that bomb enter the eyes and brain.
You know, Diana, this your writing reminded me, I didn't recognize, because I wasn't expert on this, part of this also included a story I covered probably, I don't know, I lose time, you know, 2 years maybe ago, where an officer was in such distress because they were working with Afghan soldiers, and they were bringing them into the compound.
Sure.
And these Afghan soldiers, I know you know the story, were bringing in young boys and abusing them at night, sexually abusing them. And the boys,
yes,
would cry out, and they could hear the noises. And these American soldiers and officers were beside themselves. They wanted to stop it. And they were ordered by the command to let it continue. They were not allowed to intercede. And that was also part of this being ingratiating yourself to the culture, the Islamic,
yes,
culture of the Afghans. Say more about that.
Yes, well, this would be the tragic story of the Marine Buckley, Gregory Buckley, who was shot to death by an Afghan at a base, and this was part of what came out later, exactly as you describe it, American soldiers and Marines being ordered to ignore the sexual assault on children. That is a part of Islamic culture. It is deeply seated into their culture, and this also extends to their practice of child marriage, which is an institution of Islam, which is an institution observed and practiced widely in Afghanistan, which actually had America upholding a culture that institutionalizes the rape of children and makes women chattel. So in other words, we were ordered essentially to check our own laws and morality and deepest identifying practices and beliefs at the door in order to ingratiate ourselves to this population to persuade them to agree with our mission. And I mean, this was something that is so profoundly twisted, but it was actually the animating strategic imperative of our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that has never, ever been reckoned with. I mean, frankly, rather than be elevated into a new Trump administration, I would like to see the leading officers and strategists of COIN come before Congress and explain this. Because when you look back at the carnage that they are responsible for in this effort to make nice, I mean, literally, and to on my website, the story you mentioned, This Is What COIN Looks Like, includes many pictures of Marine officers wearing Afghan garb, Marine women wearing hijabs in order to appease the population. And this is just a tiny piece of it. You mentioned the Afghan on American and other NATO troop violence. I mean, this was another aspect of this, to work alongside them, the Afghans, in order to curry favor. It was an absolutely, again, bankrupt kind of policy that you had to blind yourself and suppress all knowledge of Islamic law and the institution of jihad against the infidel in order even to institute this. And the idea that our military and our civilian leadership and our Congress got behind this is one of the great scandals of our lifetime, and it has never been reckoned with. It has never been really understood. And at this point, the idea, again, of elevating a Mattis or a Petraeus is just more insult to grievous injury. I mean, we're looking at thousands of deaths, and we are looking at even more thousands of grievously injured American and other NATO servicemen who were forced into these policies. I'd like to mention one other thing, which was the military even came up with a special kind of terminology for the kind of injury that is unique to nearly unique to the Afghan War: dismounted complex blast injury. And this would be, of course, the grievous amputations that we saw that were up sharply among U.S. forces as we got into sort of the kinetic climax of our fighting war around 2012,
Diana,
directly as a result of this
ridiculous
policy to walk the road.
Well, and of course, we're running out of time, but
sure.
Diana, the bottom line, I know you would say, and I will say, that this is a deadly, horrible manifestation of the lack of understanding of Islam, which is what we're,
yes,
seeing. This lack of knowledge from the presidency on down to the Congress. They are absolutely operating to the Pentagon, to the Department of Homeland Security, operating sometimes, I think, on purpose, but in many cases,
yes,
just really not understanding. We cannot have men like this taking over to fight this fight with this lack of understanding. And David Petraeus and General Mattis are two that you are mentioning. Let me just say, we're going to put your article, we're going to link it from our Facebook page. This is what COIN, C-O-I-N, looks like, because there's a lot more we didn't get to. Diana, you and I have to talk more longer later. I do appreciate you joining me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right. And tomorrow, by the way, we're having Rafael Cruz, and we're going to talk about Castro's Cuba, because the funeral's coming up this weekend, and we're going to set the record straight on who this man was and what Cuba has actually become because of him. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.